Australia's uniform national gun laws were framed in the grim shadows and national grief of the 1996 Port Arthur massacre in Tasmania, in which 35 people were shot dead and 23 wounded. The National Firearms Agreement has since been held up as a model for firearms control around the world. But historian, academic and Anglican bishop Tom Frame argues the agreement is outdated and has not made Australia safer. In his new book, Gun Control, the UNSW professor sets out the case for a new national gun agreement. Professor Tom Frame, welcome to breakfast.
Good morning, Hamish.
The full title of your book is Gun Control, What Australia Got Right and Wrong. Our laws, as we all know, are celebrated around the world as being very effective. The gold standard, some would say. What do you think we got wrong?
Well, I think the first thing, there's no undergirding philosophy to the agreement at all. It just said that certain firearms will not be held by certain people. There's no statement of principles. I think it casts law-abiding shooters as adversaries of their fellow citizens, and I think they resisted the buyback scheme. So we have a grey market of firearms in this country that was avoidable. It's expensive regulation, where I think the money could have been better spent. I don't really, Hamish, think it's kept us safer. We think it has, and yet if violence is about motive and means, the means actually still exist. And I think it's fueled the rise of minor parties with expanded right-wing agendas, and that's not been good for, I think, the way we've dealt with this issue, as though any change is something about the far right wanting to secure firearms for who knows what end.
Why do you argue in this book that you don't think it's made Australians safer?
Well, Hamish, before 1996, there was already a decline in homicide, suicide and gun-related crime. Now, all of the studies conducted since 1996, and in fact 2001 really, when there was a body of data to work on, have said that yes, there was a decline before Port Arthur, and the question is the extent to which the decline may have been helped by the National Firearms Agreement, if at all. Now, there's only one study by Andrew Lee, who's a Labor parliamentarian, who said it made a substantial contribution to increasing the decrease. But everyone else has said it's modest at best, if at all. Now, if Australians think that we have a gold standard and that's keeping us safe, then they're not dealing with the two elements that ought to concern us. The motive, and since 1996, mass murders have been conducted with arson and with motor vehicles in public places. There's also the means. We still have, it's perfectly legal in this country to have a semi-automatic handgun. Now, we've not seen a repeat of the four shooting sprees in public places that we saw before and during 1996 that prompted the agreement. I think it's making us think we're safer than we really are.
Because the facts are that since Port Arthur, the risk of an Australian dying by gunshot has fallen by more than half, and our rate of gun homicide remains 25 times lower than that of the United States. Until the incident in Darwin in June of this year, there had been no mass shootings since the Port Arthur massacre in Australia. I mean, doesn't all of that tell you that Australia has got something right?
Well, I think it's changed our culture. So we see that firearms are a privilege, not a right. There's much more adherence to the importance of safety and diligence in the use and storage of firearms, licensing, registration, all of those things I think we've improved. But no one can draw a line other than to say these things haven't happened, therefore the National Firearms Agreement is the cause that Australians are no longer at risk of being shot in a public place. We've only ever had four of these episodes, Hamish, four, two in 87, one in 91, one in 96. We didn't have them prior to 1987, the kind of shooting sprees that made us fear an American-style situation where in a shopping mall or in a public place, someone would just open up with a firearm. We had four, and there was already a decline, and you've mentioned the decline of those statistics. It was happening before Port Arthur. It's just not good evidence-based public policy to say, oh, well, those things came about because the NFA happened to sit in the middle. I mean, all public policy is about managing risk and sometimes mitigating it. We do that with, I think, cars and poisons and knives. What we need in Australia is a better debate about where we ought to sit government regulation. There are a million licensed firearm owners in Australia. It's not right that we should say, well, we had these four episodes over 20 years ago, and because of that, we will tie these people up in their sport or their vocation in a whole lot of red tape that's not actually making us, in my view, any safer.
So you do talk a lot in the book about the red tape and reducing it. Why is that the answer Why does reducing red tape ultimately, in your view, lead to making Australians safer?
Well, in part because we can take the resources that we invest, or I think to some degree waste, regulating law-abiding shooters and put it into dealing with a gun crime with criminals, with the importation of firearms that never exist. They're not held by licensed shooters and they're not registered. And actually put resources where more and more people are dying, which is domestic violence, of which women are principally the victims.
But
we're spending a lot of money on a system that's not yielding a positive result, Hamish.
For example, one of the things you want to do is to reduce the frequency with which people have to renew their license. You're talking about introducing a 10-year firearms license. Why would we want to do that? I mean, that gives someone the license for a very long period of time. A lot can change in a person's life. Their stability can be dramatically affected over that period. Why grant people a license for that length of time?
Because there's no evidence to suggest, Hamish, that by having a 2-year or a 3-year period that we're even safer. The period has nothing to do with the safety of the community. It's got to do with regulation. And if someone's circumstances do change, there's a whole range of mechanisms that either require them to self-declare or others to declare that they're no longer in a fit state to have a license. So there are mechanisms already to do that. And we know that a number of state registries would prefer the period of licensing from B to 5 to 10 because they don't think it makes us safer. It just adds to the processes that they need to adhere to. And I think they think it's cheaper if we go to 10-year licenses. If you do anything wrong, and shooters know this, if you're a law-abiding shooter, if you do anything wrong, you know that you will lose the privilege of having a firearm. And I think that's a strong deterrent. And I think that's the thing that's keeping us safe.
Can we just look at this from the other perspective, though? Doesn't that red tape, don't those frequent checks go some way to ensuring this cultural change that you've described as a positive outcome from what happened when this was introduced?
If I could say to you honestly that these things have, there's a straight line between the cause and the effect, then I would agree with you, Hamish. I'd say, okay, look, it's important that we have checks and balances, and I'm not suggesting that we don't. And somewhere, though, between what we do have, which is excessive and time-consuming, and we say in all things in public policy, look, let's not inconvenience citizens if we don't need to. I know there's a lot at stake. We're talking about public safety. But if we could say, all right, there are these certain checks and balances which yield certain things, then let's deal with them. But we haven't had a cost-benefit analysis of the extent to which this regulation achieves its outcome, which is, in the first instance, to stop shooting sprees in public places. I accept that people will be fearful of firearms being held by the wrong people. So I began the book by saying, this is a book about fear. But we ought not to fear in Australia that we have either more shooters and more firearms, because there is not a correlation between the number of shooters and the number of firearms and murder, suicide and gun crime. I think if the resources were shifted, and we didn't just interfere in people's lives, governments don't have a right to do that without a good reason, we're not putting the burden on government to say, why is it that you are impeding and interfering with vocation and people's recreation when there isn't a demonstrable benefit to the public at large? I'm just saying, let's move the debate, let's move the discussion just a little, so that any talk about changing any aspect of the NFA is not regarded as, let's scrap the whole thing. I'm certainly not suggesting that. And I think there is a middle ground.
Okay.
There's a good ground that we need to find ourselves in, and we're not yet there.
Professor Tom Frame, thank you.
My pleasure.
The book is called Gun Control. It's published by New South Wales Publishing.